You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Delighted to be joined by our next guest. He is the principal at Windskill Elementary School in Lancaster, Wisconsin. Principal Brad Sturmer is here. Good morning, sir. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, good morning to you guys. Glad to be here.
Happy to have you here. Really looking forward to talk about this. I found this in WPR from Corrine Hess, and the headline says, "This Wisconsin school excels at teaching math. Can its approach work statewide?" So my co-host Greg Bach and I are both mathematically challenged, which is why we do what we do. And I'm really fascinated by this. What is it that you are doing differently at your school that is helping change these numbers?
Well, there's definitely a lot to it. But, you know, it all starts with the people. We have great people in place here at Windskill, and teaching staff, support staff. You know, whenever I talk about things like this and, you know, how do you have the successes you do, I talk about people's structures and systems. But it's definitely people first. You really got to build a strong culture. I started here 7 years ago as elementary principal, and that was the focus year one, because we had a strong team in place, but culture and climate really needed to improve. So that's kind of where I start with that conversation, Jane, is, you know, people first, culture first, and that's got to always be the focus.
Brad, what is your background personally?
I was a high school math teacher for 15 years. Just growing up, I loved math, and was a math major in college and decided to teach because I wanted to help others with, you know, with my math skills. So 15 years in that. The last three, I also did some administrative work as an assistant principal, and then the elementary job came open in my district, and it's kind of felt like what I was called to do, and so now I'm here, and I love it.
Good for you.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Thank you for doing that. And I think teachers are heroes. I could not do your job even for one day without losing my mind. So I have so much respect for teachers. I always thought, Brad, and hopefully I'm wrong, that there are just some people who get math and others who don't. Or is it really about the way that it is presented to people that's more of an issue?
Definitely the latter, you know, how it's taught to kids, because all kids can learn math and how to do it. It's, you know, unfortunately, the way that, you know, a lot of us were taught math, probably you guys, myself included, it just isn't the way that it should be done. You really got to focus on the why behind mathematics, and building the foundational knowledge at these early ages is absolutely critical. I mean, sometimes people overlook the importance of the early ages in education for some reason. The reality is, if kids don't, if they're not at grade level by the end of third grade with regards to mathematics at grade level or higher, they're very, very likely to always struggle with math. And therefore, what ends up happening is, if kids struggle at math, and then you're getting taught fourth grade, fifth grade, the subject that's very challenging for you, you're going to end up basically hating it at some point.
You feel like a failure. You feel like you're, yeah. At least I did. It's like, there's something wrong with me that I don't get this and everybody else gets it.
Yeah. And that's unfortunate, because that's just not the case. And, you know, along with that, what comes with that too, the I hate math, I can't do math, a lot of times behaviors will come up too, you know, because, and just think of us as adults, like if somebody's asking us to do something that's really hard for us and we can't do it, and it's every day, right? Every day, you know, we need to do this, you need to do this. Like, it's hard. I can't do this. Well, eventually, you know, kids are going to they're going to have behavior problems.
Act out a little bit.
Get out of class, yeah. Or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So,
Well, yes. Thank you for making me show up every day so I can fail is essentially what it feels like, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, can we blame kids for that? I mean, as think of us as adults, what would you do if you were asked to do something really, really hard every day? And then you start feeling, you know, like you're just not like you guys were saying, like
you're not good enough.
Yeah. Like, what's wrong with me? So we really need to put the ownership on ourselves as educators and leaders in education, that it's our job to make sure that we do our job very, very well, especially at an early age.
Well, so something that I've heard people speak about, and I don't have children, so I've never had an experience with it, but is quote unquote the new math, which I think has been around for a long time anyway. So it's not so much new, it's just a different way of doing math. In what you have created and being a math major, a person who enjoys math, what was the process of changing this program for you? Was it something you brought from your teachings, or did you sit down with teachers and say, hey, let's put together a program that will enrich all, will raise test scores, and will benefit all? What is the history behind how you changed your approach to teaching math at your school?
Well, I think, you create a sense of urgency. You know, when you look at data and you see that 40% of your kids are proficient, or advanced in math, like that's not good enough. And you start throwing things at your teachers who really, really love their kids. And if you, tell them that, which again, this is the truth, if kids are behind mathematically after third grade, they're always going to struggle at it. And then you might be closing doors for kids. So like if you have a third grader who wants to be a vet tech someday, but they need to go to college for that. And I talked to my staff about they got to take algebra 2. A lot of colleges need you to pass algebra 2. Well, that's a really hard class. And especially if kids struggled at math through all the way up to that point.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So you create that sense of urgency, like this is really, really important. And then this is how it's done. You know, like this is how we need to teach math. And there's good resources out there. We happen to have a good one in place when I got here. So then it's just a matter of doing it to fidelity. And when I say fidelity, I'm careful of that because sometimes people think that means you do everything the textbook tells you, which is just not true. It just means you do it the right way all throughout the school and every grade and every class. And that's where it comes down to the structures and systems that I mentioned to you before. And I can get into some detail with that, but I'll see where you guys kind of want to take that.
No, sure. Yeah. I'd love to know the detail because I think there might be teachers, principals, parents, and kids who might be listening who want to know how to maybe implement new techniques, best practices, things like that. So please give us some details. We'd love to hear.
If you're just joining us, Brad Sturmer is our guest. He's the principal at Windskill Elementary School in Lancaster, Wisconsin, and they're having success with the way they are teaching math and improving math scores. And also we're going to talk about your literacy program in just a little bit. But yes, Brad, if you wouldn't mind going into a few more specifics about how this works, what are you doing?
Yeah, and I'll start with a quick reminder. It's people first, culture first, always. Mm-hmm. It's got to be the forefront of every conversation that anybody listens to this. Because without strong people, without a strong culture, none of the structures and systems I'm going to talk about work. One of the key structures is your schedule, right? You gotta have 90 minutes of math at every grade level. And there's a lot of schools that don't have that. I mean, our school, when I first got here, I kind of did an audit of the schedule and how much time you're putting towards math. And I mean, some grade levels are doing 45 minutes a day, which is just unacceptable. It's got to be 90 minutes. You got to put at least 60 in there for core, just like what you're delivering to all students. And then 30 minutes of some time that you can use to enrich your kids, the kids that need to be pushed in math. And sometimes that people lose focus on that, but there's a lot of kids that get bored with math because they learn it rather quickly, or they already know it. So that 30 minutes, you got to have time to enrich those kids, but also time for some interventions for the kids that it's a little bit more of a struggle for, and you got to give them a little double dose of what you're doing. So that's an easy structure to fix. You got to have 90 minutes. And then one big thing we did here at Windskill was we departmentalized. And what I mean by that, so at fourth and fifth grade, we have three sections, and right in the first year, I I made a schedule where we have one teacher that teaches math all day, and then one teacher that teaches literacy, and one teacher that teaches social studies science. So our math teacher will teach all three homerooms in a 60-minute block. And then later, and I'll share my schedule with anybody who wants it, anybody that's asked. So without getting into a lot of detail there, because, you know, there's more to it, but just that departmentalization is big, because then your teachers can become experts in that field. And you put people that are passionate about math in those positions, and they can, all their professional development and all the books that they read over the summer, and you know, everything that they, because teachers love their kids and they have a lot of passion for what they do. And if you put that passion towards one subject, that can be really beneficial. And it worked so well in those two grades the first couple of years we did it, that we ended up moving it to third grade. We have a little bit different format for that, but still it's one teacher teaches math all day. We have third grade math teacher. And then it worked so well that we moved it down to second grade. This past year, we departmentalized in second grade, and the teachers loved it. Kids thrived. My daughter was in that grade. It was fantastic in second grade. So that's been two big pieces there.
Well, that makes so much sense, Brad, to allow teachers to specialize in an area that they're really good at, because I think our teachers are asked to do so much and to be so many things to our kids. They're counselors and they're peacemakers and they're, you know, and then educator seems to be tagged on the back. So it's nice that they're able to concentrate their efforts in an area where they excel.
Right. And, you know, the reality is, in that elementary education, there's a lot of teachers that got into teaching for great reasons. They love kids. They want to help kids. But there's not a lot of kids that get it, or teachers, sorry, that get into education at the elementary level because they love math. Like, they're passionate about math. So for people like me that love math, went to college, got a math degree, teach, a lot of those people teach high school math,
right?
Typically, right. High school, middle school math. But we can change that. We can change where schools are. Build passionate math teachers at the elementary level, and departmentalization is one way that you can do it, so they can have that focus. Because those are a couple of the structures, but then, you know, just the how you teach math is really important. You know, the math tricks you got to throw out the window. You know, like something as simple as solving for a proportion, you cross multiply and divide, like that's the way you're taught, but why does that work? And when you're doing two-digit addition, and, you know, 5 + 8, you know, 3, you carry the 1, like all of those things, you can't talk about math that way. And that's the way a lot of us were taught.
Absolutely.
Right? So we have to teach it differently. And it really boils down to the why behind mathematics. Why does this work?
We're going to continue our conversation with Principal Brad Sturmer, principal at Windskill Elementary in Lancaster, Wisconsin. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvinator on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Our guest is Brad Sturmer, principal of Windskill Elementary School in Lancaster. Nearly 80% of the students at Windskill either advanced or meeting expectations in math, according to the latest report card from DPI. So we were talking to Principal Sturmer about that and their successes. One of the things you had alluded to before we went to the break, Brad, was just about how the importance of math, and Greg and I were talking about this off the air during the break, math is in everything. I mean, if you want to go into astronomy, if you want to go into science, if you want to go into the trades, if you want to be a musician, math is, as much as people like me might want to avoid it, math is everywhere.
It sure is, that's for sure. So, yeah, but I would totally agree with you on that.
One of the things also, sir, you wanted to talk to us about when you we were going back and forth on getting you on the show was you also have a literacy program in your school that you wanted to discuss. Can you tell us more about that as well?
Yeah, you know, it's in the Act 20, something that came out a couple summers ago, and there's a lot of good behind it. There's some things that maybe are a little flawed with it, too, but there's a lot of focus on literacy right now in elementary education, and as there should be. But just saying that, and you know, you guys maybe saw a little or heard a little bit of my math passion come out. I could sit and talk about mathematics all day long. Mm-hmm. But anybody that wants to, you know, when they talk about how we teach math, they got to talk to my teachers here. They're just phenomenal. We have a great staff, just an NA team, an all-star team. It's amazing what these my teachers can do in this building. But, you know, with all the focus on literacy, which there needs to be, there does need to be a focus on mathematics still. So, like, we got to keep that in mind. But, yeah, with regards to literacy, we made some big changes with how we do things here. Right after, it was about 2020. And it all boils down to really having our teachers get dig in deep to the science of reading and really learn how kids learn how to read. And what was fascinating about it was when I came down to the elementary level, I didn't have a clue how kids learned how to read. Not a clue. And obviously I needed to learn fast because I'm an elementary principal and a leader. Well, I was fortunate enough to have some people in my building. My brother-in-law was actually one of them. His name's Jim Addison. And he's a literacy savant, really. But he pointed me towards, we need to dig into the science of reading, Brad. And I did first. And strange, I got quarantined and I just had some time and I dug deep and I was like, holy cow, this is fascinating and makes a ton of logical sense. And just my math brain I just think very logically. It's
sure.
My brain works. And I was like, wow, this makes sense. And then my team, we dug into it together, and then we did 2 years of professional development with letters, and it's a resource teaching about the science of reading, which unfortunately a lot of universities now they're kind of forced to with Act 20, but they weren't teaching. There's a kind of a little debate with this, but they weren't teaching the science of reading to teachers that were going to teach kids to learn how to read. So anyway, long story short, our teachers bought in, dug in, learned how to do it, you know, embedded in the science of reading, and we're seeing a lot of positive gains.
I'm curious as well, and I don't know that you have that there's anything quantifiable about this, but do you believe that it makes a difference if parents read to their kids when they're very small? Does that matter?
If they're what? I'm sorry, something.
If parents read to their children when they're very small before they even get into school, do you think that matters?
100%. Yeah, just. There's so much that goes into those preschool, you know, birth to school that we can, as parents, can help our kids with learning how to read. And yes, reading to them is one of them, but just exposing them to a lot of vocabulary and background knowledge is huge with learning how to read, you know. And it's kids on phones is just, yeah, it's really been detrimental for a lot of things. Speech is, you know, numbers are going through the roof. So just like exposing your kids to rich, you know, just things so they build that background knowledge and vocabulary. Those are definitely backbones to learning how to read.
Well, and I just think for me, I have very fond memories of being very, very small and sitting on my dad's lap while he read to me. But I think it is those kinds of emotions and that gave me an affection for reading because of that bonding I had with my dad. So I think sometimes if you can instill that in your kids, that will give them an affection for it then.
Absolutely. Just seeing your parents enjoy reading. And that goes, I'll go back to the math side of things. How many times parents will tell their kids, I hate math. I was no good at math. Like, oh, don't say that.
My mom used to say, you got your love for math from me, and we both hate math. I don't hate math. I love math. It's just unfortunate I can't wrap my brain around certain concepts because of the teaching thing, but
you need to develop a remedial course for adults at Winskill Elementary for math, Brad, for the mathematically challenged adults in the world.
We could do that. You catch on really quick. Sure.
He is the principal of Winskill Elementary in Lancaster, Wisconsin. Brad Sturmer has been our guest. It's been so interesting. Principal Sturmer, thank you so very much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. I enjoyed hanging out with you guys today, and I love talking math. Anybody that wants to reach out to me, I've had some people do that via email or whatever. I'm happy to help, because if I can help even one teacher out there or one leader out there, then it eventually helps kids, which is why we're all in this business. So
thank you so much. We'll include a link in our show notes to Winskill Elementary. We have news coming up next. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach. Calvin Ayer on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can join us as well. Call or text at 855-752-4842. You can leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up in a little bit, around 10:52 or so, we will wrap up the show with This Shouldn't Be a Thing, as we always do. Today it is the Human Popsicle Edition. Stick around for that. And just a reminder, we have some baseball coming your way, too, depending upon where you are listening. The Brewers are hosting the Braves today. Our broadcast starts at 12:35. You can catch the game on terrestrial radio on WRCE in Richland Center, WISS in Oshkosh, WRJN here in Racine and Kenosha, WCQM in Park Falls, and WBZH in Hayward. The crew hosting the Braves. Our broadcast starts today at 12:35. And I wanted to share this real quickly, too. We had a comment on the live stream from Willoughby. Greetings from Nicaragua.
There you go.
If you have the Civic Media app, you can listen to us anywhere.
You could. We are everywhere in this world, and someday we will. I am serious. We will get to the International Space Station.
We're working.
That's
on
my
it.
Goal.
We're working on it. Hello, Willoughby. Thank you for listening, and thank you for taking us along. We are delighted to be joined in studio by a longtime friend of mine.
Hey,
Rich Smith is here, co-founder of the Sixth Street Theater and Over Our Head Players. Here in Racine. Good morning, my friend. How are you?
Good morning. I'm wonderful. Thanks for having me.
I am so glad to have you in. Sixth Street Theater and Over Our Head Players have been in existence now for how long?
We're going into our 34th season.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. It's crazy.
We were so young.
I know. No, we haven't aged. It's all the same.
You guys are real old.
Yes, we're really old now. Wow, that's amazing. And you've been in Sixth Street for how many years?
We've been in the Sixth Street space now for 28 seasons. Yeah.
There you go.
It's great.
Very humble beginnings. First productions were at George's Bar.
Yep. We were a theater company that was born in a bar.
Born in
a
bar.
We like to say. Yep.
Theater in the bar.
I did a show at George's once, and it was definitely, as I said yesterday, it was definitely a show that happened.
The sight lines were terrible.
Yeah.
The sight lines of that place were terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was a great space, and he was very accommodating for us for the shows that we did down there.
Yeah, it was a springboard. Like, hey, Dave, pop off. We want to come in your bar and do plays and stuff.
Oh,
and
sure, yeah.
Dave scratches his chin and says, I don't know, I'm trying to sell beer and soda. And we look at each other. Oh, we're going to sell a lot of beer and soda, Dave. No problem. Okay. We had no idea we were going to sell beer and soda.
None.
But we did.
And it worked.
It worked great.
For a long time.
We did that for 7 years. Yeah.
Wow.
That's unreal.
You were doing plays in there?
Yeah, we did plays.
We did a couple of heavy things.
That is Wisconsin to the core.
Yeah.
We're going to go see that play at a bar.
At a bar, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Theater in the bar. It was perfect for show. And again, we did some very silly shows.
Oh, yeah, mostly comedy. Mostly comedy.
Cheese Louise remains one of my favorite dumb plays
of
all time.
Yeah.
It's very, very silly.
A revival of Cheese Louise.
It's called Cheese Louise in the Dells. No One Can Hear You Scream is the full title. It's about Augie and Louise, who own a gas station and bumping car ride in the Dells called Augie and Louise's Cheese Louise Bump and Pump. And a Flatlander dies on the bumper car, and they end up going to jail for murder. And they have to raise money to pay their legal fees, so they throw a variety show, and that's the whole play. But this group in Chicago did it, and we saw it down in Chicago. We're like, this is hilarious. And we went, we said, hey, we want to do this in Wisconsin, can we? And they said, yeah, go ahead.
Sure. So, did you have to pay royalties or anything?
We did. We worked it out with them on the side. I think we gave them like $100.
Oh, that is hilarious. Yeah.
We got money for beer for the show.
We actually did do it twice.
We did it. We brought it back. And we brought it back. I had to look them up. They were called the Illegitimate Players at the time, and they did a few funny things out of a small storefront theater in Chicago, and we followed them for a while. But when we brought it back, I had to look them up on Facebook and say, hey, do you want some money? Because we're going to do your play again.
Oh, that is so funny. Yeah. Well, 6th Street, we were talking before you joined us, the whole Snow Dance Festival, which is now an international festival.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah. It is. I mean, you get entries from all over the world.
Yeah.
And this is a big event in Racine.
Yeah, we love it. We wish we had a bigger space. So our theater seat's like 80, you know?
Yeah.
And when we first did Snow Dance, we were like, Snow Dance is a competition of 10-minute comedies. So, you know, a trumpet player needs a trumpet. A playwright needs a theater, you know?
Right.
And so theater playwrights rather love it. They'll find you. They've got short 10-minute comedies. They're eager to get them in someone's hands.
And there's nowhere to perform these.
Not a lot.
Right?
Not a lot.
Where do you go with these things?
Yeah, we've got to look at it. We might be the longest running 10-minute comedy festival now.
Wow.
Of just comedies. There's a lot of 10-minute play festivals. But sure. 10-minute comedy festival. And the last time we checked, we're the only ones that were like a competition. So like we'll take in these scripts from all over the world, and we'll pick 8 or 9 or 10 of them that are the funniest, and we'll put them back-to-back-to-back order. And then when an audience member comes in, they get their program, and then they get a little ballot with their program.
They get to vote. Mm.
So they'll watch all the finalists, and they'll vote for the one that they think is funniest, and then we'll give that playwright a cash prize.
Wow.
So it's big fun. People like being the boss.
I'm sure.
They like being the judge.
People like winning hot cash.
Is there a big trophy involved?
There's a weird trophy. You know what it is? Dick Chudnow from Comedy Sports gave us this loving cup. A bunch of us used to play Comedy Sports together. And the first time we won a Comedy Sports match against Milwaukee, he gave us this ridiculous old bowling trophy that's all dented. It's a loving cup. It's huge. And I kept it ever since. And so it doesn't travel.
It stays in the theater. Mm-hmm.
But it's our little award that we hold up once in a while.
I'll make this connect, I promise. So this past weekend was the finals of the French Open, and Coco Gauff won the French Open. Mm-hmm. And when they win, they hoist this giant trophy over their head. Well, that trophy stays in France, and they get, I'm not kidding you, what looks like was bought at a trophy store. A tiny trophy. And she was like holding it next to her head, like, this is how big it is. So maybe there could be like a smaller, like,
made out of plastic,
like, just
or
like,
something.
Yeah. Like, here's our trophy. Here's what you get. And it's just like
an even cheaper version.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
We'd have to find an artist to duplicate the dents and bends.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be great. So that's Snow Dance.
I know that 6th Street recently did a big interior redesign, as it were. Yeah. You put in new chairs and everything.
Yeah. So we love being part of downtown Racine. Mm. I mean, that's part of our bit. You know, we love hearing restaurants say, yeah, we were super busy, you guys must be doing a play. That's awesome to us. So we wanted to stay downtown, and we want to stay there. You know, we want to keep storefront theater alive and well in Racine. We definitely have an audience for it. Ticket sales are great.
Yeah.
So we want to stay down there. So we did a capital campaign a couple of years ago to take our storefront space and make it more of a studio storefront atmosphere with some updated lighting equipment overhead, and sound system, and more LED lights, and
nice,
and new chairs. People are getting bigger.
Yes.
Yeah.
People are getting bigger. Yeah.
I'm not, but
you're not. You look great, actually. You look fantastic. But I mean, again, it's a small space the way it is, and so you do want folks to be comfy.
Yeah, yeah. So that was a big step for us. Yeah. So we lost a couple seats out of our. We were 84. Now we're like 80.
So 80. All right.
It's worth it.
What I own a venue in Milwaukee. I co-own a venue in Milwaukee. We do stand-up comedy, and it's 80 seats as well. And you know, working around that small venue, but trying to make it a big welcoming space. Like, I saw some of the pictures, and it just looks like it. You went all out on the redesign. It looks very, very beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
To really make people comfy inside. Cause it's not about, it is about fitting in the seats. That's a good thing too. It's like, no one wants to sit in an airplane seat when going to see a theater experience.
Right.
But it's also just when you walk in and have that comfy, you know, layout, and it, what I saw looks wonderful. So
great. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. We had a moment where we thought maybe we should find another space, you know, and we're selling out, things are going great. I don't want to, you know, jinx us or anything. And so we did a little poll of some of our subscribers and stuff, and they're like, don't you dare. You know, we love
you there.
We love the intimacy of, like, you feel like you're in the experience.
Well, you are so close to the stage.
You're on it.
Yeah.
You really do feel like you're part of it.
When we hold auditions, I have to watch if people spit because they're not in. If you're going to spit during an audition,
you're going to hit the first three rows.
I know you went to Juilliard, but man, I am covered. This isn't disgusting.
This isn't a Gallagher show. Yeah. You're close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very close.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what is coming up for this season now? Are you dark all summer?
We're not. We're not. I'd like to be sometimes.
I bet you would.
No, I get it.
No, it's okay. Summers are so busy in Racine. There's so much going on. Mm-hmm. Which is great. So we're finishing our season right now with, we have two more weekends of the 39 Steps.
Classic
which is
play.
A classic, yeah. Like, hilarious thing that's gotten crazy popular in the last 15 years. And we love it. And our audience loves it. It's good fun. Tickets are still available for that. Overheadplayers.org. And that's still running for two more weekends. And then we're doing a thing in late July called Smorgasbord.
And what is Smorgasbord?
Yeah, it's this thing. So there's a dude in town, Nick Ramsey, who has a non-for-profit called Family Power. And Nick is all about supporting local artists, musicians, poets, anything. And so we're doing a thing called Smorgasbord where we're welcoming eight, I guess, or more maybe, different artists in like a very casual talk show, sort of a coffee shop setting. So when you come into Smorgasbord, you know, you get welcomed, you get wine, you get beer with the show, and they're going to meet different artists. You're going to meet a poet who's going to do some poetry. You're going to meet a vocalist who's going to sing and perform. You're going to meet a musician who's going to play some music. You're going to get to watch a snow dance 10-minute comedy performed that has never been selected for production.
Oh, that's awesome.
So you'll get a little comedy and a little bit of theater, and you'll get a culinary artist. Emerson, the guy who owns Dragon Pit Barbecue next to us, is our first culinary artist. So you're going to learn a little bit about how to smoke meat and the art of barbecue,
food.
Of food. And then everybody gets a little bit of barbecue with their wine and stuff. And the whole thing will take about 75 minutes. You'll meet some great local artists, have a little snack, a little wine.
And that sounds wonderful.
That sounds fun. We're really excited about it. That's the last weekend in July. Tickets will be on sale for that on our website, I think, next week. So,
well, and again, what a wonderful place to highlight local talent, which, again, I just don't know how many places are there where poets can go poet.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know?
I gotta go poet somewhere.
I have to go poet.
Jeff on the live stream says he loves the drink holders there.
Oh, thank you, Jeff.
What's special about the drink holders?
We spared no expense for those, Jeff.
Are they in the chair?
Yeah. So yeah, the old chairs. You had to figure out where to put your beer because we're not shy about that. We make jokes that all of the sales of our concessions at the 6th Street Theater go to ensure that the overhead players will be here for future generations. So when you're drinking at intermission, you're drinking for the children.
You're doing it for us.
You're drinking it for art.
Yeah. So we had to make sure there were cup holders in there, but I'm glad they're being used.
Yeah.
If anyone is listening, you are always holding auditions too. And you're always looking, right? You're looking for stage hands and you name it.
Jane, I want you to read this. I want you to read this monologue right now, please.
I don't know. I don't know if I can audition for this group.
Oh, you're in. You already have. You're a veteran. You've been on stage with us before.
But if people are interested in getting involved, we will include all the contact info for Overhead Players.
Everything can be found at overheadplayers.org. And we're kind of on the shoulder now. Like, our season is ending and the new stuff's coming on. So if you go there and you don't see new things yet, check back in another week because everything's coming up now.
Support your local theater. It's a wonderful, wonderful organization. Overheadplayers.org at the 6th Street Theater in Racine. Rich Smith, good to see you, my friend. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
We got This Shouldn't Be a Thing coming up next. Stay with us. This is Matt Nair on air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Matt Nair on air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvitini on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us. Call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up in just a little bit after the 11 o'clock news. Be listening for the voices of Greg and me.
Ooh.
We're going to give you the keyword you want to text in via the Civic Media app next hour. It's all part of our Scotty Summer Statewide Text to Win contest. You have a chance to pick up either $100 in hot cash or a pair of Milwaukee Brewers tickets, club level seats. Everybody who enters in the drawing for one of two grand prizes, a little summer getaway in either Door County or Baraboo with gas to get you there. So be listening for that keyword again coming up after the 11 o'clock news and the Tom Hartman Show. Spelling counts.
If you want the key, listen to Jane and me. Oh, there you go. There you go.
But spelling counts, so make sure you get the word correct. Yes. That is coming up after 11 o'clock. You have four chances to enter through this Friday is when the contest will wrap up. It's the 7 o'clock hour with Pat, 11 o'clock hour with Tom Hartman, 2 o'clock hour with Todd Alba and Maggie Dawn at 4 p.m. So our statewide Scotty Summer Text Win Contest coming up right after 11 o'clock. Tomorrow is Thursday, so Jim Santel will be here, our friend and colleague and host of Amicus, a law review Saturdays across the network from 9 to 11. Little weather and wine with Brittany Merlot.
Mm-hmm.
See what we got coming up. And then J.R. Radcliffe from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel will be here to talk all things sports. Someone said he's got married. Yeah, I don't believe it.
Really?
No.
You think he's lying?
I think he's lying. I think the announcement that he joined the Steelers on Friday got completely wiped off the pages because of all the other news, and I think he's feeling looked over.
Oh, well.
Would that surprise you?
I mean, no, it wouldn't at all. Like, I don't know. Like, all the jokes I want to make are not FCC compliant. So I just think Aaron Rodgers is a joke.
I think he's done.
He's done. Just be done.
Yeah. Go live a happy life.
Go start a podcast.
Do something.
Yeah.
Calvin, it's 10:55. That means it's time for... If you ever have a thing you think should not be, send it into Greg and me at janesays@civicmedia.us. This from the UPI, our favorite guy, Ben Hooper, with the byline. The headline reads, Swiss man buried in snow for 2 hours to break world record. There's a picture of him, too.
Great.
Elias Meyer, a competitive power lifter.
I thought you were going to say a competitive snow sitter.
Well, now he is. A competitive power lifter said he wanted to shoot for the Guinness Book of World Record on the cold endurance test. So he spent more than 2 hours buried in snow wearing only swimming trunks. He decided to take on the challenge after finding out that no one had yet gone past 2 hours. The previous record sent by Valerian Romanowski in 2022 of Poland stood at 1 hour, 45 minutes, and 2 seconds. Meyer's like, I can beat that. Wearing only a swimsuit, Elias was buried under a mound of snow for 2 hours and 7 seconds. He said the cold wasn't so much the problem as it was the weight of the snow pressing on him.
I saw that picture. I don't, whatever.
He doesn't look terribly uncomfortable.
Yeah. This is one of those world records that someone's going to beat next year and then the next year. And then it's not going to stand for 30 years. My grandfather set the record for snow sitting back in 1904 and no one's done it since.
I would just think as a power lifter, as far as competitions go, this seems kind of less.
Jane, maybe he's a power lifter who's not winning competition.
He's not a good power lifter.
He needs something to fall back on. And I want to, by the way, I want to air a grievance.
Please do.
I'm going to put this story onto the growing pile of Tizbats we've done, where I will show them to all of my friends in Europe anytime they want to look down their nose at America. Now, I don't get all you rah-rah USA Merca people, but when they make fun of America, I'm like, you guys chase cheese down a hill, you throw tomatoes at people for fun, and you sit in snow to win records. You're not much better than us. come at me, brah.
Yeah, I just have a feeling that some American now is going to try and beat the snow sitting record.
I'm going to eat 2 hours worth of snow. That's what I'm going to do. It's going to be barbecue.
Elias Meyer said the whole point was to demonstrate the body is capable of incredible things. Yes, yes, it is.
Like sitting inside where it's warm and there's a TV and I don't have to worry. I don't want to sit in the snow. I don't like being in the snow. I don't like sitting in my car when it's snowing. I'm not going to voluntarily just sit in the
you
snow.
You could break the record. It's only, 2 hours and 7 seconds?
Well,
something
folks,
to shoot for.
Folks, you heard it here first. I am making a claim that I will never try to break this record.
I think that's fair enough.
As an American, I'm quitting before I start.
That wraps up today's episode of... Thank you, Greg and Calvin and all of our engineers, because without you, nothing works. And thank you most of all for calling and for texting and for listening. It means the world. I hope you find some joy today, even if it's just a little tiny bit, and you have the chance to share it. We got news coming up next, followed by Tom Hartman from 11 to 2, Todd Alba 2 to 4, Maggie Dawn 4 to 6, and then Pete Schwabo with Nightlight 6 to 8 p.m. Keep it here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We will see you tomorrow.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.